All right, welcome to another episode. Episode, I don't know, we don't number them anymore, of the Hot Host Podcast. I'm your host, Ernest Christian, alongside, of course, Dave Ramil. Dave, it's been a good week again.
Yeah, it's had its ups and downs, you know.
2-2.
Yeah, if listeners remember correctly, I had unfortunately predicted a 0-3 road trip for them, but they were able to pull out a win in Chicago, of course, without Jimmy Butler and a team that's somewhat falling apart, but still.
You got my angry text on last Wednesday, right after the Milwaukee game.
I'm sure I did.
You got that. Okay, thank you. Jinx.
it was, you know, look, Milwaukee, for all the problems that they've had this season, they're an up-and-coming team. They still have some bright, you know, future ahead of them, especially with Giannis Antetokounmpo, you know, playing the point guard.
Again!
I did. I nailed it. Look, they're created matchup problems for Miami in the past, so they're always going to be a problem there. And Chris Middleton is a very underrated player. But, you know, enough about that. That's in the rear view. Now this team is moving forward, and part of the excitement from Heat fans is the young rookie core that the Heat has.
Oh, my God. And we'll get to that in this podcast, man. Once again, find this podcast, guys. First off, hahahoops.com. Check it out there. Also, you can subscribe to this podcast on the iTunes Store. And now we are officially on Stitcher Radio. So if you have a Stitcher Radio app, for all you Android users don't have Apple, whatever. It is what it is. I have Apple, whatever. You can find us now on Stitcher Radio, download the app, and find the podcast and subscribe to it, and you'll be able to get all the updates and stuff from the show. But like I said, 1-2 trip, which, yeah, on the surface, it looks like disappointing, but then you look at the way how things played out, yeah, you want the Milwaukee game. Obviously, the Milwaukee game was the one I thought was one that they had to have, because it at least buffers you from at least going 1-1 against Chicago and Toronto.
Right.
But, you know, I guess the Toronto game, more than anything else, kind of had a little bit of a feel, even though they lost the game, had a little bit of it's a good loss. It's a good loss because, you know, they didn't have Wade on the back of them back-to-back, and they still managed to take Toronto. A Toronto team is playing very well right now into overtime. And I guess a lot of people in Heat Twitter or Heat Nation, whatever you want to call it, you know, they feel better about this team. And of course, Monday, you know, a scrappy game against Denver, a Denver team who actually is on the way, actually improving. To be honest, they're actually playing some good basketball. I mean, the records really show that, but they actually are a pretty scrappy team. That, you know, Miami did find a way to win late in that game. So since our last podcast, the Heat are now 2-2. Right now, the tie with third in the Eastern Conference, with Boston losing last night in Indiana, and Boston also plays tonight against OKC. So the Heat have an opportunity here to really leapfrog the Celtics here in the next week or so, because if you look at all the schedules right now between the two teams, it really, really, the Heat have an opportunity here to make some noise.
Yeah, they've got some challenging games ahead of them as well. So, I mean, clearly we'll talk about that later on when we preview the upcoming games. But, you know, I think they're clearly eyeing the third seed. They want to be able to create not just home court advantage for themselves in the playoffs, but avoid some key matchups, I think, namely to avoid the Cavaliers. Although that seems like that's part of the, you know, that's likely in their future if they're able to advance past the other teams in Eastern Conference. But I think Cleveland is still the top team in the East. Clearly the ones that would provide the toughest challenge for Miami to advance further in the playoffs. So avoiding them for as long as possible is tantamount. They've been playing well. And I think we talked about this last time. They're building towards something. They're continuing the trend of improving. And that's all without the Chris Bosh, who is still practicing with the team, but not necessarily, you know, expected to join him anytime soon. So, a lot of interesting matchups over the next few weeks for Miami, Charlotte, Cleveland on Saturday. I mean, that's these are games that are going to decide not just how they move forward, but how they can actually, you know, where they stand at the end of this regular season and advance towards the playoffs.
Or as we call them, litmus tests.
Absolutely.
Yes. Your review on the latest road trip, what would you grade it based on? Like I said, 1-2, blew out Chicago, lost to Milwaukee. Of course, the Toronto game we just spoke about a little while ago. How would you grade the road trip overall, given everything we saw?
I think it's a C+.
Okay.
I'm not a big on moral victories, and that's what kind of the – I think that's what the Toronto Raptors game felt like. It was without Wade, but he's been, you know, somewhat limited and not necessarily ineffective, but he's been inconsistent at times. So, you know, the game – could have gone in Miami's favor, but they still were able to battle back there, and they really did take a tough Toronto team at Toronto on the second night of a back-to-back. So there certainly were encouraging signs there. The game against Chicago turned into a blowout late, so that was obviously something, you know, that you wanted to look forward to or see as a Heat fan. And then the game against Milwaukee, again, that's the one that really brings this grade down for me because, you know, again, you have to find a way to, you know, dominate these matchups. Yeah, they've taken games for them in the past, but this is clearly an issue, and Miami has to figure out a way to get past it. Now, Milwaukee's not going to be in the playoff picture, so that's not necessarily something that they have to concern themselves with, but other teams can see what Milwaukee has done and try to, you know, replicate that, and that's where it becomes challenging for Miami.
And the disappointing thing about the Milwaukee loss, too, was the fact that Miami, late in that game, when they were up by five, and they went away from what's been working with them for the last 3 to 4 weeks, you know, moving the ball. All of a sudden, you got guys taking quick shots and, you know, holding the ball and letting the shot clock run down and not moving the ball enough to create more offense. You know, so that's why, you know, the difference between this era and the Big Three era is the fact that now you look at these losses. If the Heat don't get a 3 seed, they get a 4 seed. It's like last year too with the playoffs, and they missed the playoffs by a game. You look at the games that, okay, what games cost us this? Like, the Philly game and this game here and this game in November and this game in December, when fans say, oh, not a big deal, we'll make up for it. Well, it costs you, you know, that you win that game and that game, you're in a better position to succeed. So once again, Milwaukee, in my opinion, represents now another loss this year that the Heat, you know, may look back and say, oh, if we had that game, you know, the Minnesota game earlier in the year, we had that game. You know, the Brooklyn loss at home, we had that game. There's a lot of those that games on this team this year again, and I mean obviously the 2 seeds. I think the 1 and 2 seed pretty much a lock between Toronto and Cleveland, but that 3 seed I think is important, and I think if Boston somehow finds a way to lock up that 3 seed by the end of the year, and by the way, they already own the tiebreaker, so there's that already. There's that issue as it is. So if the Heat don't find a way, you know, these kind of losses, man, I'm gonna burn them up. So that's why I think it's so important. The Milwaukee game was so disappointing in that sense, especially the, what they did late in that game too, going away from what they've been doing for the last couple of weeks. You know, it's disappointing. It really is.
Yeah, but I mean, what would you grade the overall road trip then? You
know, if I gave it a C plus. C plus. I mean, and the reason I even say C plus because the fact that the Toronto game, you know, kind of made up for a little bit. The Toronto game felt like a win, sort of, you know, and they hung around. Toronto's playing really good basketball. I mean, you're big on them right now. I mean, you've been criticizing me about like how I'm so down on the Raptors right now. But you know, and you play without Wade. You know, obviously Boston hasn't played since the All-Star break. So, I mean, to see the team play as well as they did and still stick in the game and not fall behind. Every time Toronto tried to pull in that game, Miami found a way to stay in there, and you know. But you know, like I said, you know, losses like Milwaukee will come to bite you in the butt if you're not careful.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, they moved on at least, and you know, they were able to get a good game at home against Denver. Good, you know, that's a good win, and they take some days off, and so I think it's a good chance for them to regroup and kind of fine tune the things that they, you know, that they were able to do positively and work on some of those negative things. So I think there's a lot to be hopeful there, you know. They still got 15 games left in the season, right? I think that's where we stand at right now. They've played
around there, yeah, roughly.
Yeah, 67 games, I think, is what I'm looking at. So they've got 15 games there. I'd say you probably have to win at least 10 of those. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's probably a good number for them to reach. And then they could finish up with a season, you know, 49 wins on the season. Probably exceeds expectations for a lot of people.
Right, okay. I have a concern here, and I guess everybody around has spoken about this, of course, you know, many times over. But I don't think we had never brought it up in this podcast, and we're gonna do it now. I am very concerned about Joel Green and his shooting. Lack of, should I say. I mean, he is, and not for nothing, Spoelstra is still trying to get him involved. He's still playing significant minutes, you know, at least 20 minutes a game or close to 20 minutes a game the last couple of games. And for some reason, still cold. I don't have numbers in front of me, man, but he's shooting under 40% from the field the last, like, I think 2 months.
Yeah, I wouldn't sweat it too much, to to be honest with you. Because I think, you know, we've seen Spoelstra in the past tighten those rotations a little bit once he enters into the playoffs. So I think it's important for him, I mean, Spoelstra, to try and play Gerald now so that he can try and, rebuild some of the confidence that he's clearly lost over the course of the season. He's seen his minutes slipping further and further away. First, Justice Winslow came in there and started playing ahead of him because of his incredible defense. Now Josh Richardson is doing that. Gerald Green is no longer a vital part of this team. Remember, a few weeks ago, it seemed like we needed a contribution from him in order to be able to pull out a win. That's no longer the case. At this point, he's merely a luxury. So I wouldn't worry about it too much.
No, right. True. And I think, and we'll get to this in a second. Josh Richardson, of course, stepping up and bringing a perimeter game and defense, the whole nine, the energy. It's just another situation where if he plays well, and here's another question I think we have to start asking ourselves now. If Gerald Green continues to play this bad, will he even be a part of the playoff rotation?
Right. That's my point. I don't think he will. That's why I think, you want to try and build that. I think Spoelstra has been in this long enough now, with four trips to the finals and all the playoff experience that he's amassed and being part of the coaching rotation for years. I think he knows exactly what to do as the playoffs get nearer. And I think he understands that when it comes to Gerald, who hasn't had a whole hell of a lot of playoff experience, he needs to get him ready towards the end of the season. It doesn't matter what he did in December or November. It's what he does in March and April that really counts. So I think he's trying to get him some minutes now, and that's why he's playing him as much as he is, even though he's clearly not as effective as he once was. And that's, if he's able to turn it around, then he'll get playing time. He needs to earn it. And I think Spoelstra recognizes that even a veteran like Green needs to earn that playing time. So if he doesn't turn it around in the next few weeks, he's clearly out of the rotation and he probably won't play in the playoffs. And it won't necessarily matter because you've got other players stepping up. I think you don't want to put too much weight on rookies like Winslow and Richardson, but hell, at this point they're producing. So why not continue to keep them as heavy minute getters in the rotation?
This is concerning. His last 8 games, he's shooting 25%, 0%, 0%, 0%, 28%, 35% is his best here, 33%, and then 11% against Toronto on Saturday. That is putrid.
It's confidence, man. I think, players need some kind of stability there. I think they need some kind of a boost in confidence. He's not getting any kind of steady minutes. They're been an up and down, and partly due to players stepping up and partly due to his own lack of success. And it's just the way it happens. So
and also four DNPs in there too, and within those 8 games.
Right. So it's hard to build any kind of consistency or stability when you're in and out of the lineup, but even when you're there, you're not producing. Gerald has always been a very streaky shooter. We saw that throughout his career. He's had huge games. He had big games here at the start of the season when nobody expected him to do that. So you weren't counting on the addition of Joe Johnson, clearly. You weren't counting on the rookies stepping up the way they have. You weren't even counting on Amar'e Stoudemire. Now all these players are playing much better than they were, and Gerald Green finds himself out of the rotation or being a lesser factor than he was expected to be. So you know what? I'm okay with it. I'm hoping for the best because you want to see a guy like him succeed. He hasn't been a problem yet. I mean, he had his occasion there, whatever that might have been. I don't know if there was anything illegal. We never found out all the details about what was going on there. But
he take care of that pretty well. They keep that under wraps pretty well. They're pretty good about that. Speaking of rotation, Joshua Roberts, any room for him in a rotation? It's weird because, like, at the start of the second half of the season, in the All-Star break, he played significant minutes the first 2-3 games out the gate and played very well. And all of a sudden, he's gone.
It's interesting, right? I mean, either Spoelstra is concerned about his health, but I don't think that's the case. We haven't heard anything about McRoberts being injured or having any kind of lingering issues. My feeling is that they're not playing him because of his defensive liabilities.
Right.
I think the team is better equipped right now having a smaller lineup, and McRoberts at his size would either have to play the center position I don't think he would even be an adequate power forward at this point, considering they're starting Lou Alding there, who's a couple inches shorter than McRoberts. So he's just too slow to guard slower players. He's not strong enough to guard bigger players, so he's just – He's an issue there defensively. So whatever the case might be, he's not getting any kind of playing time, and I don't think he's earned it either. So I'm not sure exactly where he fits into the picture long term.
Well, I do think that they're gonna try to dump his salary somehow this summer.
Yeah.
I mean, for lack of trying. I mean, I don't know if they will do it or if they can do it, but I know that I think they're gonna try to. Because I mean, obviously with this Heat team too, especially now, it was just weird because he played very well out the gate when they announced Bosch wasn't playing and
right.
You know, Wade missed the first game against Atlanta. You know, McBob played phenomenal. You know, which is weird. I mean, it wasn't like he played himself out of rotation. It's just, I think it's a situation now with the fact that I think he doesn't fit this team now, what they're doing.
Right.
That's all right. It is. But hey, it is what it is. I am stunned. Not that he's playing well, but just how great he's playing. Jay Rich, man. Josh Richardson playing phenomenal basketball since the All-Star break. Phenomenal basketball. How impressed are you with this kid, man?
Very. You know, a rookie, first of all, and a second-round pick. So, you know, it's hard to predict exactly what players are going to, you know, develop over the course of the season. But he's, you know, the kind of guy that Riley likes, an older player, you know, a four-year player at Tennessee, and a hard, tireless worker from everything we've heard. So he's, you know, considering where he was at the beginning of the season, where he showed flashes of athleticism and defensive tenacity, now he's not just being, you know, a tireless worker, but also a major contributor. I mean, he's a big-time scorer, and he's been very productive. Now, you know, it's still his rookie season, so you don't want to put, like I said, you know, too much pressure on him to produce during the playoffs, but it's hard to see him all of a sudden just falling off and not being as productive as he's been. You know, we've seen some incredible shooting from him at clutch moments in the games. He was a big factor in the Chicago win. He was another big time scorer in the Denver win. So he's playing at a high level right now. You know, we got an interesting story this week that you and I were talking about before we'd gone on the podcast, which I'd like to share. If you haven't read it, Jason Leiser of the Palm Beach Post was talking about the kind of work that Josh Richardson has been doing, specifically in his outside shooting. And for him, it was important to reach a certain number. He's taking 100 three-point attempts after every practice, getting in a little work there. And he had to hit 64 of those 100. So that was the magic number that he wanted to reach. He gets to that point, and just as he's about to walk off, none other than Eric Spoelstra walks in the door and says, "How many did you make?" And Richardson responds, 64. He says, "Nuh-uh, you're not leaving this court until you get 70 out of 100. So he keeps making Richardson take shot after shot after shot, going through those rounds of 100. After every session, he keeps building a little bit more, 65, 66, making him run sprints in between these shooting sessions. And then finally he gets to 70, and he's, you know, feeling proud of himself. And now all of a sudden, you know, he's realized that this is the kind of effort, this is the kind of work that you need to do in order to succeed at this level. And clearly it's paying off. We were talking about the numbers beforehand. Since the All-Star break, on 36 three-point attempts, he's connected on 19 of them, over 50%. That's incredible shooting. You know, we're starting to see the benefits of having a guy like him come off the bench and be a productive, you know, bench player. You know, again, with his defense, he had a really nice play a couple games ago where he was, you know, he was able to pick off a pass from Emmanuel Mudiay, you know, and he took it coast to coast. He's athletic. He finishes strong at the rim, and that be able to bring in some perimeter shooting as well. He's an all-around player, and those are the kinds of things that you want to see out of veterans and are completely unexpected out of a rookie like Josh Richardson.
Wait, that Spoelstra story. Are you sure it wasn't Pat Riley? That's so Pat Riley. That is so – that's why – look, that story is the reason why Dwayne Wade said when the Big Three era started, we don't want Riley back on the bench. All these idiot fans who sit there and say, oh, we need Riley. They don't want Riley to coach this team. Come on now. That ain't happening because – of stuff like that. Oh, but you know, as we say, Spoelstra is an extension of Pat Riley, and what you saw there, if that story is true, which would lead to believe that Jason Leisure is telling the truth, obviously, that is a typical Pat Riley story right there. Typical Pat Riley extension right there.
I'm looking at it right now. He got quotes from both of them, so clearly there was some collaboration there.
There you go.
And Spoelstra says to him, "Are we going to get this?" Meaning the number 70, or are you going to make me waste my whole day in here? That's great. He's egging him on. And then Richardson responds, "Jesus, you're right. I got to get it together." This is a guy who realizes the work that he needs to do. And Spoelstra follows that up when he's talking to Jason Leiser. He says, "Our program's not for everybody. You have to have the right kind of player. And a lot of players just really aren't willing to put in that kind of work." Amazing. I mean, great story. Really shows you the kind of, you know, tenacity that this player has as a rookie and how he's willing to put in the work. It's great to see him, you know, thrive off the bench.
And once again, the Heat are actually, even though we know the mantra, Pat Riley hates rookies and young players.
Sure,
but
sure.
The Heat are actually really good at developing young players.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for a team that thrives by adding veterans and doesn't necessarily put a lot of weight in young rookies or the draft, they've got Justice Winslow, an all-around great player, you know, who's going to, you know, improve offensively. Josh Richardson, who's clearly showing that he has the capacity to be a solid two-way player. Tyler Johnson, who came from out of nowhere and was able to build himself up through the work that he did in the D-League affiliate. Hassan Whiteside, who had fallen off the map. And, yeah, I mean, he's in his fourth year out of college, but, you know, nobody even wanted to give him a chance. He was on the Memphis Grizzlies, a team that's falling apart right now. He was on the Memphis Grizzlies practice squad, and he didn't even make it to the team. They cut him before the season started, and he found himself in Charlotte, you know, playing at the YMCA. Everybody knows the story by now, until Miami gave him the opportunity. And you look at that, and it's such a great young core. And for a team that doesn't necessarily build through the draft, they know how to mine talent. They know how to find it in unexpected places. And like you said, develop it. They've really learned how to use the D-League as a proper farm system, using the same kind of coaching techniques that these kids would see at the professional level. And, you know, it's just the way the game has changed now, where a player who's
right.
You know, they've got so many young players that even a first-round pick or a second-round pick or a guy like Johnson who doesn't get picked at all, they're not that much. There's not much of a difference there as far as overall talent. It's about being able to do the work, the willingness, and like we got from that story from Richardson, you know, being able to adapt and understand how much it takes to thrive at this level. That's what the Heat take pride in, and that's what they're able to implement.
And a trend I'm seeing here now, too, with this Richardson story as well, too, a trend now, is that Eric Spoelstra, yeah, the guy that everyone's get credit for, but then always get blamed when something bad happens. When something good happens, it's not Eric, but when something bad happens, it's Eric's fault. A trend I'm seeing here, too, now, is that Spoelstra is personally working with Whiteside, as I mentioned 2 weeks ago.
Right.
He's going to reveal that 2 weeks ago. And then Legion now saying, you know, Richardson now. He's personally taking those projects as his own.
Yeah. I mean, you didn't really consider him. Yeah. I mean, you know, everybody wanted to point to the Big Three era where he was basically just, you know, he could have had anybody coaching there as far as, you know, that's what a lot of the critics said.
Yeah. We always hear that. And then you wonder why Dave Mack gets fired. And then you wonder why Del Harris for Phil Jackson to LA got fired because of Kobe and Shaq. I mean, and you wonder why Doug Collins got fired. I mean, you know, that same old BS about, oh, I might coach his team. So why does that happen more often?
Right.
Just saying. Right. People just like to talk as they hear themselves talk. I'm sick of it. Do your history. It's out there. Google it. Seriously, guys. It won't hurt your head. I promise you.
It's just hard. I mean, you look at the amount of talent and you think, yeah, it's easy for them to coach those kinds of people. And maybe it's not necessarily about developing or X's and O's even. But there is a part of that, and it has to be blended together with a very important part of it, which is, you know, managing personalities. Look, you can't discredit that aspect of it. You know, guys like Phil Jackson, the reason why they were able to win the kind of championships that they did, Pat Riley, it was getting the most out of these players. They can all be great players. But, you know, finding a way to get them to work together, to focus on a common goal, which is always winning a championship, that takes special kind of leadership. Spoelstra has it, Riley had it, and Phil Jackson have it. Those are the kinds of elite-level coaches. And I think, you know, it's time to recognize the things that Spoelstra has done here with this team.
Well, he's on my blog. I'm going to put this week my Coach of the Year rankings for March, and he's in my top five.
Yeah, I think he deserves it.
I'm not saying he's going to win it. Nor should he win it. I mean, still got Steve Kerr, still got Pop, of course, still got Brad Stevens. But
Terry Stotts, I think.
Yeah, Terry Stotts in there too, and Dwayne Casey. But I mean, in terms of best coaching jobs this year, top five, six jobs this year, Spoelstra in that category.
Yeah, I mean, you look at a guy like George Karl, who is historically one of the winningest coaches in NBA history, and yet he's having so many problems dealing with a guy that's so immensely talented in DeMarcus Cousins. And you wonder if you couldn't have that same situation here in Sacramento. I mean, in Miami with Hassan Whiteside. I mean, the fact that Whiteside's accepted a role off the bench, that he's still taking pride in putting up big numbers and being, and not just you know, stat padding, but also really contributing towards wins. That's a product of coaching. It's not just Spoelstra too. It's the guys that he has alongside him, and guys like Juwan Howard and Alonzo Mourning, people that have been there, know what it's like to play the center position at this level, and it really helped develop a guy like Whiteside, who's, you know, been accosted and insulted because of his personality issues, whatever those might be, and he's, you know, he's turning around. I'm happy to see him being a productive member of the team, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. I'm also happy to see Joe Johnson fit so perfect with this team in this 9 games.
Yeah.
I thought there'd be a little bit of adjustment. There really hasn't really been much one to really see. And once again, coaching, figuring out, tweaking lineups and stuff. You know, sliding Luol down to the four, you know, starting Amari for the time being, you know, Whiteside and off the bench. Joel Johnson just gets the starting lineup and it fits like a perfect puzzle. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I had thought he was washed up, to be honest with you. I mean, I think like a lot of people, we kind of stopped watching Brooklyn Nets games knowing that they weren't going to be very good. They were difficult to watch, and you know, there wasn't much talent there. There wasn't much coaching. There wasn't much of anything. A lack of vision, something Miami has never had. And so when you hear all the stories about how bad that team is, and of course, you know, there's some prejudice there about Johnson considering the contract and all the stories and everything else. We talked about that when he was first signed. But the way he's embraced what Miami's doing here, the way he's fit in, mm-hmm. unbelievable. And, you know, part of that is him being a trusted veteran, a guy who's been through it all and seen a lot of different things over the course of his career. But you got to give credit again to the coaching staff, to the veterans who have worked alongside him, who wanted to put him in a position to succeed, and it's paid off for both Johnson and the team. I mean, you look at where they are right now and where they were prior to his addition, it's a light years difference as far as the way the team is playing and, you know, scoring at a high level. It's impressive. I think, you know, we've talked about it before. This is a team that can definitely be dangerous in the playoffs when they're playing at the best, at the highest level that they're capable of reaching.
Speaking of dangerous, Joe Johnson is shooting nearly 59% from three as a member of the Miami Heat.
Wow. Is it really that high?
17 of 29. If these numbers are right. I'm staring right now. 17-29 from three. He's shooting 56% overall from the field in 9 games with the Miami Heat.
That is
so. Like I said, production, efficiency, and here's the thing with Joe Johnson. I get the you know, the conversation the last 7 years. Oh, he's way overpaid. Yes, he's overpaid. We know that, but Atlanta paid him because they had to pay him. They had to because of the market. They had to pay him. But if you take away the idea of the number of the contract he had in Atlanta, and then ultimately to Brooklyn, of course, he's still a very good player. I think what Joe Johnson needed was to be in a situation where on a team that is at least competitive, at least winning ball games, at least a playoff team. He's in Brooklyn on a team that's going to be a top 3 or 4 lottery team this year. You know, that's in the rebuilding phase. I never believed the idea that he was washed up. And look, if Joe Johnson is your number 3 or 4 guy, that's amazing.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Yeah. He was Brooklyn's number 1 guy. I mean, obviously he's not gonna do well there because I mean, and not to mention he doesn't have the more of a laid back, you know, cool Joe type of guy. You now he's on a team with Dwayne Wade, Chris. Let's assume Chris Bosh is back. Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade, Goran Dragic. You know, he's arguably the fourth or fifth best player on his team right now, and that's a good thing for the Heat.
Absolutely, absolutely, and that's a good point there because you know, no, it doesn't fall on any one player to champion this team or to lead them to victory or anything like that. We're not seeing the same situation that we are in Cleveland with LeBron or Oklahoma City with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. You know, it's not about that. It's more of a team concept here where any one of these players can step up on any given night. I mean, you look at the kind of production, Luol Deng's had big games since the All-Star break. Goran Dragic has been playing phenomenally well. Even Stoudemire is being a good contributor, if not a great one, but he's still playing really well on defense, trying his best and, you know, spacing the floor a little bit. Wade clearly still playing at a high level. You know, if the rookies are able to maintain this kind of production, it's just, you know, like you said, there are like 5 or 6 players on any given night could put up almost 20 points. That's an impressive number. You know, it's not always going to happen, but the fact that all of them are capable of, that means that if one of them's having a bad night, you know, 4 or 5 of them can step up and still be able to produce at a high level. That makes this team incredibly dangerous with or without Bosh. Clearly, we hope that he's going to be able to rejoin the team at some point. But even right now, they're still playing at a pretty high level.
Speaking of Dwayne Wade, he had a thigh bruise he had last week?
Yeah, deep contusion, right?
He missed the Bulls game. No, he played the Bulls game, right? He played the Bulls game, missed the Toronto game on Saturday, played on Monday. Looked okay. Any concern about that? I mean, people have said should be concerned about it. I agree with that a little bit. Are you concerned about the Wade injury?
I'm not concerned about it. I don't think it's going to have any kind of lingering effects, but I think there was even a story in Hot Hoops that ran today saying that their biggest issue is about playoffs, is being effective in the playoffs, not necessarily seeding. And I'm not so sure if I agree with that, but at the same time, I understand the perspective, the argument there, that it's better for him to be healthy and be able to maintain that health once the playoffs begin, because, you know, the fact that you're playing games over, you know, at a higher level, that you're facing the same opponent, that's going to be able to recognize weaknesses and exploit those. It's definitely concerning, but I think you still need him out there. I think you need him to play at a high level. If you want to manage his minutes a little bit, I'm okay with that. And I think it's easier to do that if you're getting the kind of production that you are from guys like, you know, Richardson and Winslow. It allows Spoelstra to, you know, mismatch the or create mismatches in lineups there, to move players around to different positions.
And that right there is why the Gerald Green thing hurts, because, you know, if Wade's hurt and needs a couple back to back off, maybe some minutes restriction. Gerald Green in a spot would be perfect to have. He's playing well.
Sure.
You know, he's another wing player that can step in there and eat minutes up and give Wade reasons to take games off or take, you know, minutes restrictions, whatever it may be. That's why the Gerald Green thing's an issue long term.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Gerald Green start a game, even if he's, you know, quickly yanked back to the bench. But that could be the kind of thing to boost that confidence. I mean, we've seen him be productive as a starter, so it might be something that helps them in that. I mean, then you can always slide Joe Johnson into the two guard. It's a little bit, it's a harder for him on a, from a defensive perspective. But I
that's
think
what, that's can, what they did on. I think that's what they did on Saturday.
Right, against Toronto.
Yeah, so they had him at the two. But yeah, and I think Eric, not to go to Gerald Green again, but I think Spoelstra and company, they want to see this Gerald Green thing through before April.
Yeah, sure.
See, make sure this is, because if Green does, like I said, we knew coming into the situation with him that he's very streaky. He gets hot, he's dangerous, you know. But if he's cold, he's like John Starks. He's so John. He's so John Starks. He really is.
Yeah. You know, so. Yeah. It'd be nice. It'd be nice to get Tyler Johnson back too. I don't think we've heard anything, because I think all eyes are on Chris Bosh and his impending return, whenever that might be. But I remember reading that Tyler Johnson was expected to be back with the team by April. So hopefully within the next few weeks, we'll see a return of Tyler there. I mean, it's going to be a little bit more difficult for him to get into that playing shape, but he's young. And, you know, it was a shoulder injury, so that shouldn't be really impacting his overall conditioning that much. You know, I think he'll be a factor moving down as the playoffs get near.
What I've heard is that he's been practicing with the team, at least with trainers and stuff. There was a story I heard that, because it was his left shoulder that got hurt, right? Left shoulder?
Yeah.
And I think he had tried to shoot with his left shoulder, and someone from the Heat staff said, "What are you doing? Don't do that! Don't do that!" Because they make sure that they don't, that these players take care of themselves and don't do anything stupid. Because I think I heard on one of the talk shows here, I think it was Ira, somebody had mentioned that one of the Heat training staff had to give him some tough love because he was trying to shoot with the left arm, and he's not cleared to do anything yet. So, but what I am hearing about Tyler Johnson, the fact that he is shooting for an April return. So whether or not that remains to be seen, obviously. But he'll definitely be a great fit for this, especially with this pace now that they're doing. He'd be a perfect fit for this pace.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, with his athleticism, the fact that he's a good ball handler, and tough defensive player as well. You know, he gives constant effort. He's another guy just like Richardson. You know, he's they're very similar in playing style, although I'd say Richardson's a little bit more athletic, taller, longer, et cetera. Absolutely. I think Tyler Johnson would be a big factor here. You just want as many players as possible who are able to give that kind of high level effort and versatility that so many teams require nowadays. It's just, you know, the way the game has changed, you want guys that can fit multiple positions. You could put them at the one or the two. You could create really active small ball lineups with Bosch in at center. That would be an incredible opportunity for him. And, you know, there's just a lot of things that you can do with a guy like Tyler Johnson. So, you know, from what I'm seeing here, the most recent, I think, I'm looking at a March 9th story that came out from the Sun Sentinel saying that he's targeting a return by the playoffs. So let's hope that's the case.
Right. And I think that also affect the Gerald Green thing. If he's able to play and they prefer him over Gerald Green, that's where I think Gerald Green will lose his spot. But we'll see what happens there. We have a lot of time left before the season ends. Let's discuss the updated standings in Eastern Conference right now. Obviously, Cleveland 1, Toronto 2. It's getting very interesting now in the middle of the East now because, you know, we were talking about 3-4 Boston, Miami, obviously, but then Charlotte has come on as of late. Atlanta's come on as of late. Indiana's playing, you know, they're hanging around. And, of course, the Bulls who are in the 8th seed. But I still, look, a little off topic here. I think the Bulls, if they get in and healthy, they're going to be dangerous. Regardless of everything that's they've gone through this year. If they're healthy enough by April in the playoffs, if they get Butler back healthy and, you know, Rose is relatively healthy and obviously Gasol's having a phenomenal year, I think the Bulls could still be a dangerous lower-seeded team. If I'm Cleveland or Toronto, especially Toronto, I don't want Chicago in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, they could rough up whoever they face there and possibly upset them as well. I mean, and you get a guy like Butler back. I mean, I think a lot of people have kind of taken them for granted because they're not quite the same powerhouse that they were in previous seasons. They're not as great defensively as they were or whatever, but they're still playing at a pretty, you know, not necessarily high level, but they're still playing somewhat good basketball there. And I think they, you know, health has been their overall concern. Yeah, that would be a pretty good threat for either Cleveland or Toronto, particularly Toronto. I think that would certainly make me look bad as far as my appreciation for what the Raptors have been able to do this season. They could be knocked off of the playoffs pretty easily by a team like Chicago if they're at full strength.
Well, Toronto, I think it's 0-3 against Chicago this year, 0-4.
Yeah.
They lost them 2 nights ago.
Yeah,
home. You know, so like I said, you know, it's a situation. I think the East playoffs this year is setting up to be very interesting. Very interesting. And not just in the middle, but even, you know, I'm not saying Cleveland is going to lose in the first round, but Indiana and or Chicago will give them issues.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and you look at teams like Charlotte and Atlanta. Maybe Atlanta's not as strong as they were last season, but I think they could create some matchup problems there. It's there's a lot of work for Miami to do in order to. Who would you say? Let's go take a step back here.
Yeah.
If you're Miami, who would you want to face in the first round of the playoffs?
Probably Charlotte.
See, I'm concerned about Charlotte. Maybe
Charlotte
we'll see a little bit.
Charlotte or Atlanta?
I think Atlanta is probably a better matchup for Miami. Because I'm concerned that Charlotte, with their perimeter shooting and their coaching, I think they could find a way to flip a switch there and cause some mismatch problems. Goran Dragic's defensive issues with a guy like Kemba Walker who can attack the rim, I think it's not necessarily the best matchup for them. So I'd say Atlanta was a team that Miami would probably prefer playing in the playoffs.
Well, we'll know more on tomorrow night because they play them tomorrow night. Huge game. Yeah. Charlotte-Miami tomorrow night on a huge game because I think we were all looking up in the standings and not paying attention below. And right. Charlotte got hot. They won 8 last 10 games. And I don't know how they'll be, you know, as a best of 7 competitor. But I'd tell you what, right now, going down the stretch here, they are very dangerous. And the Heat, this is a huge game. This is one of the biggest games of the year for the Heat, if you think about it.
Yeah, I wonder if they're going to be looking ahead to, you know, Saturday's matchup against Cleveland and maybe overlooking this Cleveland team. You probably expect not, considering Spoelstra knows enough to keep them focused on what they're doing. They've had plenty of rest. They've had 3 days off, so I think they'll be focused on their next opponent. It should be an interesting one, man. It could be. I'm predicting a win, but at the same time, it's probably going to be a lot closer than people expect.
Oh, of course, absolutely. Like I said, the only game I have behind for the 4 spot. And here's what's setting up now, too, because Boston just lost last night to Indiana.
I
earlier in the show. Boston also plays tonight against OKC. Now, granted, OKC has been struggling since the All-Star break, but it's still OKC. They should be able to win that game at the Garden. That's on ESPN, by the way. A little plug there for ESPN, whatever. But should Boston lose tonight and the Heat win tomorrow night, the Heat are the official three seed in the Eastern Conference.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, now obviously that means nothing in the bigger picture right now because there's still a lot of basketball to be played. But my point is that look at Boston's schedule going forward. Look at Miami's schedule going forward. The Heat have opportunities here to lock up the three seed by the end of March.
Yeah,
if things go their way.
15 games left, so you got to start building momentum now. In games like this, you can't afford to have many more slip ups the way you did against, Milwaukee. And you know they play some patsies along the way here. They have to be able to win those games. They've got enough tough games. I think they face San Antonio at some point. They face Cleveland again. You know, games against the Magic. They've got two matchups there against Orlando.
That's not easy either. Let's just be real here. They ain't no such thing as an easy game anymore. Because even bad teams this time of year become dangerous.
Sure. I mean, Philadelphia played them tight a few years ago. I mean, a few weeks ago. That's certainly a concern of theirs. They got Sacramento. That's a team that doesn't have anything to they're playing at Los Angeles. They've got a three-game road trip there. L.A., Sacramento, and Portland. You can't afford a slip up against the Lakers. As bad as they've been, they still tough. You know, they still played a tough game against Golden State.
They beat Golden State, yeah.
Sacramento, as crazy as they've been, dysfunctional as they've been, they can still be productive there. You don't want to see Boogie Cousins go for 30 or 40 against Miami there. So that's going to be a matchup to watch when they face each other March 30th. So I mean, they have to take every game seriously, and then it comes down to the last game of the season, April 13th. At Boston. That could be the game that decides where they wind up in the standings.
Mm-hmm. By the way, the Kings, you mentioned the Kings real quick.
Sure.
If there was one year I thought they could have slipped in the playoffs, it would have been this year, given how the bottom of the West isn't that great, and yet they still can't find a way in.
They were right up there a few weeks ago, and then, the recent issues, they've just fallen apart again.
That is a soap opera in itself.
Unbelievable. Yeah, this is, considering... I mean, a lot of guys here in South Florida, a lot of fans in South Florida don't know exactly what's going on over there because they don't watch Kings games regularly. They're always late at night.
They're actually do you know what's funny, Dave? They're actually more relevant than we realize, though. They're actually, they do get a lot of look-sees. They do get a lot of attention from people for the wrong reasons, obviously, but they do get a lot of attention.
Well, they've got players like Rajon Rondo and DeMarcus Cousins who garner a lot of headlines. And are capable of being productive and big, putting up big numbers. So they're always going to have some attention. And then the fact that the team is just like no one knows what's going on behind the scenes. It's just chaotic there. Between Vlade Divac kind of running the show and George Karl kind of throwing things apart, and then DeMarcus saying there are snakes everywhere out for his job, etc. The recent suspension, the fights on the bench. There's just so much going on there. And for a team like Miami, and for Miami fans that have seen nothing but high-level basketball for so many years and a tight-knit organization that's run as well as Miami has, they can't imagine the chaos that's going on in Sacramento right now, but it's interesting. It's worth watching, I'll tell you that much.
It's crazy, and yeah, they're pretty much out of it now. They're now, what, 8.5 back in the standings for the – or 7.5 back in the standings for the 8 seed? Yeah,
I think Dallas falls out of the playoffs in the Western Conference, and Utah finds a way to get in there, to be honest with you.
I think so, too. And I think they get it. We should get Haley on the show. That's good. Seriously. But, yeah, I had Utah as the 8 seed anyway before the year started. So I think that's pretty much going to happen.
All right.
Let's look at the upcoming schedule. Of course, tonight we have tomorrow night, Charlotte. The Hornets are in town. Jordan probably in town, too, with them. You say win?
I do. I think they find a way to keep the pace going and employ their perimeter defense that we've seen. It's been spotty at moments, but I think overall they're still going to be, especially with 3 days off, I think they're going to be able to focus on shutting down Charlotte's key scorers there. So I think Miami wins, and they might win big too.
Yeah. I say win also too. I think I just think they'll find a way to win this game too. And then Saturday, of course, our old friend LeBron James and the Cavaliers. Well, first off, do you think LeBron plays this week?
Yeah, I think he'll probably take he probably will take Friday and Saturday off because it's they're going to be in Orlando on a first night of a back-to-back set, so he might not play against Miami, and I think Miami wins it also.
Wait, you think LeBron misses the Miami game also? Really?
Yeah, I think he'll sit it out.
Really?
Yeah, I think it creates too much drama that he doesn't necessarily want to in this sense, because, you know, the lingering issues with Miami or whatever. He sat out games against the Heat before.
Right, but if he sat out again, though, this year in Miami, would that create even more drama?
Possibly, but, I mean, look, the way the teams are playing right now, there's a very good chance that they'll face each other in the playoffs. And he won't be able to just simply sit those games out. So a game in, you know, I know that Toronto is hot on their heels, but there's enough opportunity there. They'll probably win the game in Orlando. On the second night of a back-to-back, it's just too much work for him. I think at this point he needs to be fully recovered for the playoffs. So I think he sits it out, to be honest with you.
Wow. And that's a win, then.
I think
he
so.
He sits out to win. If he does, well, I think it's a win regardless. He plus not. For some reason, the Heat own the Cavaliers at home with LeBron. Doesn't matter.
Well, I mean,
and, well, last year, well, people forget this. Last year, they went 2-2 against the Cavaliers.
Yeah,
and both the wins without Chris Bosh.
That's correct.
I'm just saying, people forget that.
I know you wouldn't, but yeah, it was the big Christmas game. That was a good one.
I'm here for the people. You know that. I'm here for the people.
Always.
All right, and I assume we'll probably do a show. Maybe Monday. I don't know if I want to go through the away games, because we have New Orleans and San Antonio on Tuesday and Wednesday, but we may do a podcast Monday, most likely, just to preview these games.
If not Monday or Thursday, then, because that'll give us a really good – I mean, that'll be an interesting litmus test. I think San Antonio at home, if you find a way to beat New Orleans, which I'm sure that's certainly possible. But San Antonio, on a second night of a back-to-back, that one could get ugly.
That can get ugly. I mean, I don't know. I don't see that one. But we may do a podcast probably on Monday just to preview these two games. We'll see what happens. And, of course, you're going to the Orlando game on Friday next week?
No, this week, actually. I'm going to Orlando versus Cleveland, so I'll be there.
No, I mean the Heat game. No, that's home. That's a home game. I apologize. That's a home game at the AAA. Never mind. I read that wrong.
No worries. I'm covering the Friday, April 8th game at Orlando, so that should be a good one.
All right. Once again, follow David Ramil on Twitter, DRamil13. Anything you want to add before we let you go?
No, I think we've covered everything.
Anything going on? Any new articles? Anything?
No, it's been a slow week, just trying to catch up on watching all these games, and you know, just trying to see what's in the future. So I've got Cleveland coming up in a couple games, so I think I'm waiting to see what stories manifest from that matchup. So it should be a good one.
Of course. Follow me on Twitter at EJChristian7. Check out my other podcast to get a chance, guys. A little plug here. The Earnest Speaking Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, the whole nine, or NGSESports.com. And I think that's it, Dave. I think we did a good job today.
Yeah, we did, sir. Always good talking with you.
Of course, man.